This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Letters podcast. I'm Amy, also known as Sweet on Dean, and I'm here with Jules from the Super Wiki, and today we're going to be talking about two episodes. We're going to be talking about the Hunter Games and There's No Place Like Home.
We certainly are, and oh my god, what a way to come back from hiatus. I'm just exploding with feels.
I'm exploding with feels too. I've been having lots and lots of feels, and it just feels so good when the show comes back. It's just like your week seems to get shorter and way busier. but it feels so much better. It just feels so much better to have the show back and have a new episode to look forward to every week and a new pain to look forward to every week.
Oh, and new tears. It's been intense, hasn't it?
It has.
Just with that, we're going to go through first the Hunter Games and then There's No Place Like Home. Ooh. Although, of course, there's themes running through both of those. Yeah. But often we come back from the mid-season break, and we often go into a couple of Monster of the Week episodes, and sometimes there's sort of a bit of a lull from the overarching myth arc. But I suppose because the myth arc is so personal this year, this season, that we haven't gone away from that. And Dean and the Mark have been at the, and how he and Sam and Cass and everyone's coping with it have been at the centre of these two episodes. And I have to say, I think as we commented, and it was so in the first half of this bit of the season, but oh my god, just having the brothers on the same page and Sam looking after Dean, and oh my god, I'm just full of feels.
I'm ecstatic.
The bromance are breaking me.
I'm ecstatic. I couldn't be happier. I couldn't be a happier fan. I mean, I love it when they're working together, and I love it. I love them all the time, but I love them when they're working together, and I love them when they're taking care of each other, and I love them when they're actually talking and they're actually being honest. And there's a lot of that going on. And Sam at the moment, I know this sounds strange, but I actually think he looks taller or something, which is ridiculous, right? Because he's already 6 foot a million. But he just really seems to fill every single frame, and not just because he's gigantor, but just something about him now. He's like got this, and I don't think it's just because Dean looks a little bit broken down next to him. I think he's like, he just seems to be so strong at the moment, so full of belief, that it's like it's puffing him up, but in a really good way. And every time I see him in a scene, I think, you look enormous.
I've often said in the past that those moments when Sam takes charge or is angry or is in control, it's sort of like he unfurls.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like often he's and I felt this, his uncertainty in the world, and that he is often a bit hunched. He is a bit sort of, trying not to make himself so big in a way.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think he certainly feels so present. And I've got so much to say about Sam. But yes, he really feels present, and that sense of him being both emotionally and physically present for what's going on at the moment.
And powerful.
He's just powerful with it. Yes.
Like everything he says, I 100% believe in him at the moment. So whatever he tells me, I'm like, yep, I'm on board with you, Sam. And if I feel like that, then Dean's obviously going to be feeling like that as well. And that's the whole point. Of course, it doesn't really matter what I feel because I don't exist in their world. But that's heartbreaking to think of. But
we need to find a way to get our postcards through to the Winchester dimension.
We do. Oh my god. But yeah, I just think everything. I just believe in him so much, and everything he's saying, I'm just right on board with him, because he just feels, as you say, so present and so strong and so powerful and so connected to everything that's going on, and I just trust him 100%.
Well, we might as well dive into the Hunter Games, which led on from the things we left behind, because it really is about, I mean, it's a bit of a triptych of families, because it's about Sam and Dean, it's about Cass and Claire, and it's about Crowley and Rowena. So we sort of, the episode swings, pivots around those three families, I suppose. So as we were saying, we've got, you know, we start off with Sam, you know, obviously really concerned about, you know, what Dean did, all the people he killed at the end of The Things We Left Behind. He's, you know, he's really worried, and so is Dean. And that's, you know, it's Dean's realization that this is something that's, the Mark is something that at the moment has control of him and has, you know, has taken him far too far with the massacre that took place at the end of that last episode.
And I think also what I really liked about the opening of this, I mean, I think it's great we open with Dean, like, as you say, reliving and realizing, oh my God, what have I done? But there was also, I really loved opening with Sam and Cass talking about what's going on with Cass, but also talking about Dean. And I love that Cass is, you know, Cass, I always love it when Sam and Cass have a chat. Like, for me, I think that they should be really great mates. And so I really loved that they were having this worried conversation about this very important person in their life. And then he walks in, which is like, awkward. Awkward.
But it is.
He's standing right behind me, isn't he? But he was,
One thing to say, because we had the Road So Far recap with Long Black Road by ELO, which was amazing. Fantastic needle drop and editing on that sequence so far. But yeah, Sam and Cass, again, it's we've seen their relationship develop, particularly last season, and this starting to see more of it again this season. And Sam trying to comfort Cass over what's going on with Claire, and like he's trying to make Cass feel better. Like, it's bullshit, of course. Like, what he says is he's just trying to make Cass feel better, and Cass sees through that. But it's just those nice little moments of ordinary friendship of, you know, no, your bum doesn't look big in that.
that I really
like, and that they then go on to, you know, talking about Dean and
who walks in. But there was also that little bit later as well when they were trying, the three of them were trying to work out what to do, and Sam was like, oh, Cass, we've got this, man, you've got too much on your plate with Claire. And you know, I really like that as well. He's like trying to sort of, I didn't take it as pushing Cass away, I took it as like trying to kind of go, Cass, you've got enough going on without you having to you know, sort of sort out our problems with us as well. But I did actually love it when Dean walked into the room, because what I've been loving so much about Dean and since he's come back with this Mark of Cain is that he just isn't really hiding anything anymore, which I don't know what the hell happened to him when he was a demon, but he just comes in and he says it, you know, and he tells the truth. He doesn't kind of try and blow anything off. He's, you know, he's traumatized by what he's done. He says, you know, there was a time I was a hunter, you know, not a killer, which is devastating. I mean, and interesting too, because he's always, there's been times where he's thought of himself as purely a killer, and it was kind of nice to actually to hear that he had started to think of himself as a hunter.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of his arc from season six onwards, was that sort of struggle between, well, teasing out in his head the difference between, killing and hunting, and, you know, well, was he just someone who killed things, or was there, you know, a bigger dimension to hunting? And it's taken him, you know, I think a lot longer to sort those things out, partly because that, you know, I think he has this this dark side of enjoying the killing part of it. I think we saw that in Purgatory, partly because he could hunt there without any of the moral dilemmas that comes with hunting in the real world, because everything in Purgatory was bad.
Kill it all.
But also, you know, accepting that the thing you're good at in life is killing things.
Yeah, it's
and
really
that there
thing.
Is an element of him, of Dean, that enjoys it. You know, we've seen that going back to, you know, right back to the beginning, really. And I think, you know, that's a bit of a theme that we'll talk about, particularly in the next episode as well, of that, you know, how you embrace that your shadow self, the part of you that does like the dark things, and that doesn't have to be a bad, that doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's as you said, his openness, both in this episode and the next, which Charlie emphasizes with her secrets are bad.
I know, I love that. Dude, secrets are bad.
But that means that we've got Sam and Dean really on the same page. It's not one of them worrying about the other because they don't know what's going on. They're worrying about the other because Sam's worrying about Dean, and he knows Dean's worrying about Dean, and he knows they both know what's going on, which is a rare thing.
It's a kind of unusual situation to be within the brothers that they, they've both been on the same page in the past when they're, going up against a foe, the big arc of the season, they're fighting the big battle, whatever. But it's actually very rare to see them communicating to the level where they both know exactly what each other is thinking and, feeling about a specific situation. I mean, it's very rare for them to have those kind of conversations, at least in recent times. They probably had those a little bit more back when they were young lads. But certainly with so much water under the bridge that they hadn't for a long time. And it's lovely to see, Sam being straight up honest and telling Dean how he feels, and Dean actually saying that he's not okay, instead of saying, I'm good, which is usually his play, So it's lovely to see it.
And I'm hoping this is, it's after what had happened between them in season 8, an evolution of their relationship in realizing, because often the secrets were motivated by wanting to protect the other one.
Yes.
Or to some extent, not trusting them. I mean, sometimes they did kept them because they didn't trust what their brother would do, weren't sure whether what the brother would do would be stop them or, go against what they wanted to do. But I think what we're seeing now is them realizing that not that they don't need to protect each other, but that is counterproductive to protecting each other. The secret's a bad message of, what they've seen, both of them, time and time again, whether it's Sam drinking blood or Dean with Dean when Gadriel's possession last season, all that stuff is, trying to protect the other one and doing it by keeping secrets doesn't end well. It hasn't worked out for them. And I'm hoping that this is something they've learned, is that it's still going to be hard to deal with these things, but dealing with them
together,
both of them knowing what's going on
properly.
So,
and I think it actually goes, I think this development in how they've kind of come together in this honesty and, whatever's brought it together through last season and the loss of Dean and then having to battle the Mark of Cain this season together, I think is, speaks very much to what Jeremy Carver was sort of saying when he took over the season, that he wanted to work the brothers towards a more mature relationship. And I think that's what we're really getting here. There just doesn't seem to be the imbalance between them that they used to sometimes be, and at the moment Sam is very much the big brother to Dean, and we've seen that happen in the past before, back and forward. But I think that their conversations now are just feel so much more like a couple of 30-year-old men who, are communicating really well together. That it feels so much more grown up, and I think they feel so much more grown up because of it. And I'm enjoying the hell out of them talking.
And I think, that's what the past couple of seasons were taking them on this journey through. Realizing, not realizing, but actually learning those lessons from what had gone on in in both season 8 and season 9 was really going, okay, they went through places where they were keeping stuff from each other. They were, keeping secrets, butting heads, not trusting that the other one would have their best interests at heart.
Making the same mistakes that they'd made over and over again over the past 5-6 years previously.
And plus they both, I think, had big moments of, in season 8 particularly, of where are we going with all this? Now we don't have, the end of the world or the Leviathans or whatever. What are we doing? Are we hunting? you know, is this our life? Is this what I want to do? And do I want to do it with you? And I think working, you know, I think they've both come to a place now. I think we've gone through the, hunting is what they do.
Yes. I think there's no doubt in that anymore.
Yeah. And I think they've both got to a place of, this is our mission and our purpose in life. And that, you know, that's really taken them up until now, you know, really up until now to get to. And the other thing is, and yes, you know, and I think particularly last two seasons we've had that, you know, I choose to do it with you.
Yes.
We have options, you know, and Sam hit a dog and had Amelia and, you know, Dean had Benny and, you know, they had opportunities to
step away,
and do it with someone else and do things elsewhere. And they've chosen each other. They've chosen hunting. And now it's trying to get that right.
No, I'm just all full of squee after that. It's so good. It's really good.
And this season has been all about them working, you know, working with that together.
Yeah.
And of course dealing with the consequences of the mark, and then just to get back to the hunter games. So, you know, we have them desperate to find you know, a solution, which leads to Cass going, and can I just say some little moments I loved. I love the portal to heaven in the playground.
I love that too.
And I love the two girls.
I love the angels
the punk angels who were guarding it. And again, like, I can have like a whole little web series of just them guarding the portal and chatting or something. That was that was just gorgeous.
And that would be a great web series, actually. You know?
But just, like, I mean, the image is just gorgeous. And then of course we have Metatron, and he's so full of his own self still, you know, full of thinking he can put it over on everyone. And even, you know, he's tied up in the bunker dungeon. And oh my God, you know, he's, you know, as most villains do, still think he's in control of everything.
Foul. I just love him. I love him, but I hate him. He killed my boy, so I hate him for that. But I can't help but enjoy him because he's foul.
Don't you just love it when Sam spits out, "You killed my brother"?
Oh, I love it.
And we have
it.
Dean going,
God.
"You killed me."
I loved it when Dean actually walked into the room, and obviously Sam knew that was going to happen, and he just sort of said, "You killed my brother," and he's like sitting back on the table, and then out of the shadows comes Dean and just bah, bah, bah. It was on Dean. Sam's just kind of looking sideways over his shoulder. It was awesome. It's like they planned it. And when I say you killed my brother, that's when you make your entrance.
Yeah. Music swells. And there's your entrance.
It was beautiful.
But, you know, it doesn't, even that, the fact that he thinks he's killed Dean and now he sees that Dean's alive.
Yeah,
his face doesn't dent his hubris at all.
Not at all.
Still,
you see a little like, uh-oh, on his face, and then he just picks up the game again and, you know, starts off. He's such a, he's so awful.
I know. Curtis Armstrong is just
brilliant.
Playing the fucking heck out of Metatron. I said, I can even, like, I reckon he smells like stale cigarettes and cat pee.
I reckon he smells like cat pee. He does. Yeah. He does. Or like just mothballs or something like that.
Yeah, a bit of mothballs.
That musky sort of horribles that, like, that old Cardi would have.
Like, he's just amazing how he's
it's a really physical performance. It's really
cool. And then, you know, the confrontation between both Metatron and Sam, but then Dean and Metatron is just, because at that moment where, you know, Metatron's setting it all, and, you know, well, I'll tell you something, but, you know, it's gonna cost you, and he's got it all worked out.
I love Dean just pulls that angel blade out of the back of his pants and twirls it around in his hands a little bit and puts it on there. I'm like, oh, my God.
And it's just like, yeah, no, it's not going to work that way because I'm going to fuck your shit up, Metatron. And even though it's bad and it's demon, it's sort of that dark side of Dean and no, we shouldn't want him to come out. Oh, my God.
It's very hot, isn't it?
It's hot and there's something about.
I love Dean when he loses his shit like that. I always have. It's not, let's face it, it's not the Mark of Cain that just makes Dean do that. And we've seen that before. He was all evil Dean. But I love it. And it was very Star Wars too. It was very, you know, give in to the dark side, you know, all that kind of Vader talk to Luke Skywalker. You know what I mean? It was like, because if you give in to the dark side, you know, come on, feel the dark side. It's coming through on all that sort of, you know, anger. Well, give in to your anger and all that kind of thing that Metatron was saying to him. I was like, oh my God, I'm watching Star Wars.
And also, you know, again, as I often say, the things that the show makes you feel add to the show. So the fact that we get excited and turned on when we have bad Dean around plays into the fact of how attractive that is. Like how attractive it is for Dean. We can understand, and as Charlie, yeah, Dark Charlie later says, you know, it frees you. And so I think it works so well that, you know, the audience, and as people keep saying, oh, I wish we had to see more of Demon Dean and we love Dark Dean, we can understand the attraction of that because, you know,
we like it.
We like this dark side of Dean, and we can recognize that it's doing horrible things, and then we can feel bad that because it makes Dean feel horrible, but at the same time we get that sense of thrill.
Yeah.
And I think that adds to it because it's like, yeah.
yeah, it's pretty cool. I do like it when he goes a bit, but it's not, you know, he has always had that side of him. And I think that's the interesting thing. And like flipping to the end of the episode when Sam's actually trying to talk to Dean about living with the Marker Cane, one thing that Sam does sort of say to him is that, you know, maybe you like it a little bit and, you know, you want to give into it a little bit. And that's the thing. Dean has always had this darkness in him. It's not like the Mark of Cain is the only...
Bringing it into him.
No, he's got it. And so, you know, like maybe it's that which is as much activating the Mark of Cain as anything. You know, they're working together because he's always had that darkness. And, you know, part of being a demon, I think he probably was really thankful that he didn't have to think about that anymore. Yeah. You know, the guilt and the shame that he feels when he does lose control, Mark of Cain or no Mark of Cain, and do things that he's then, you know, feels ashamed of afterwards. You know, he didn't feel like that when he was a demon, obviously, because he didn't care about anything. That's why he smiled all the time, apparently. you know, so I think there is a part of Dean that has that inherent violence in him that, you know, and there is, I think Sam was spot on and what you were saying about, you know, the mark making us, there's a bit of a thrill for us, and it has to be like that, you know, adrenaline pump for Dean as well to feel kind of good, to lose control a little bit and have something almost to blame for it.
I was going to say exactly, and I think this is what the show in both these episodes is playing with, is that idea, you know, and it's a long theme of the show. It's about the demon, you know, the demon within,
the hardest
demon to fight is the demon that's us. And it is that thing about, well, you can blame the mark, but it is something inside you. And I think we come to that with the metaphor with Charlie and her literal splitting into dark and good is, you know, it is you. And Dean, you know, she says that to Dean, you know, it's not something else. This is me.
And he goes, no, kiddo. And then she goes, it's me. Cause he's like still in a place where he's like, no, the Mark of Cain is, you know, controlling me. I don't think he's ready to actually recognize that.
Well, and I think that, as you said, is how important. And I mean, again, just wonderful to have a moment where we're seeing how well Sam knows Dean and how, you know, and being able to say to him, you know, that you know, there's that part of you that enjoys that or has that darkness. And it's not accusatory. It's not.
No, that was the thing. It wasn't. There was no judgment in what he was saying.
No. And the fact that Dean could hear it, like without being, oh, fuck off, Sam. You know, I am not. I mean, again, they're in such a more open place that they can have these conversations without Dean feeling judged by Sam, even when Sam's not judging, or vice versa.
Exactly.
You know, Dean's not feeling that Sam's about to leave him because he's dark. That sort of abandonment stuff is certainly a lot, and I'm not saying it's gone. I don't think it ever goes, but it's certainly not being triggered by every single thing Sam or Cass says at the moment.
No, exactly. And I think you're right that, you know, like there's just Sam's able to talk to Dean and say these things, and with no judgment in his tone at all, and Dean's able to listen to it. And I mean, that's in itself is like some kind of miracle. you know, some kind of supernatural miracle going on here. But yeah, it was you know, I mean, I think all the scene, I really enjoyed both the scenes with Metatron, the one with Sam, and then Sam and Dean together. I thought that was beautifully lit too, because Sam was sitting under a light and Dean was in the shadows.
And the same with Metatron, is that you get this sort of half shadowed on Dean's face of his darkness.
Yeah, it was so beautifully lit, you know, like Dean's
Metatron's
just
lit full on. And,
and Dean's kind of this shadowy character, just not quite, you can never quite fully see his face or...
Yeah,
and it is really beautiful.
Well, yes, reflecting that inner dichotomy that he's got at the moment. And just a shout out, because the lighting, the DP, director of photography for the episode was Brad Creaser, who's usually first camera operator, and he did the DP because Serge, who's the normal DP, is prepping for episode 12, which he directed. So kudos on just an excellent job with that, because it really intensified the scene. And I always love when they, you know, the theme of what's going on is reflected in, and enhanced by that.
Yeah, it was really beautifully done. And there was some, you know, like the scene after that too, after they confronted Metatron, where they're walking down the halls having that huge conversation. How awesome was that?
Look, you know, how they make that bunker look so huge and labyrinth-like is just incredible. And that scene of them walking through it, I mean, besides the fact it's the boys talking, which we love.
I know, I love that too.
But again, you just, you know, we're starting, you know, we've now had a few, couple of seasons of being in the bunker. And, you know, I think I tweeted out the time just what an incredible character it's become.
Yes.
And how it has. And I know a lot of people, and myself included, were sort of a bit apprehensive of how was this going to change the show if they had a home base and rather than just a motel every week and that. And it's just been such, I think, a fantastic addition in terms of of being able to have scenes like that.
Oh.
Being able to have a dungeon.
Being able to have a dungeon is great.
Because, you know, it's a bit hard to torture someone in a motel room. I mean, you can always find those handily abandoned warehouses, but just the interconnection of those spaces, and being you know, the fact that you can still feel, you know, they can play it as you know, the moments of domesticity and intimacy, but it's also a workplace, and plus it's also you know, it's got its own character so strongly with the with the set deck by Jerry Wanock and crew, is just, you know, it's beautiful to look at, and gives just so many opportunities. It's just been wonderful.
Yeah, it is. And just when we get those scenes, it just, I love them. I love seeing all the different little nooks and crannies of the bunker. I'm like you, I probably was a little bit, oh my God, they're going to have a home. What does this actually mean when they built the bunker, and they, and you know, the crew was sort of saying, this thing's here to stay, FYI, because it cost us a bomb, and you know, we're not burning it down. And I was like, oh God, what's that going to be? They, you know, always going to be there. I'm going to miss those motel rooms. But the bunker has just such character. It's just, you know, it's so beautifully created. And it's just added so much, I think, to the story.
It gives opportunities for stuff to happen that couldn't have happened if they're in a motel room.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's those, and Bobby's place was the same to an extent as well. I mean, there are things you can do when you have a home base, when you have a room that a house that has or a place that has a kitchen and different spaces,
shooting like gallery,
and even, you know, that has corridors you can walk around and talk.
Yeah.
To your brother in.
Yeah. I don't even remember seeing a scene like that before. I was like, look at them walking down the hall talking. This is awesome. Well, and I was like, I don't think we've seen them ever really doing anything like that before.
Only when they've been in places like hospitals or
yeah,
those sort of places. Occasionally we have corridor scenes, but they're not the same sort of conversation, because it's not it's a public environment.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
A personal environment. And I won't go off on a huge tangent, because actually my very first essay I had published about Supernatural was about the Impala. And I talked a lot about how different spaces work in TV shows, the domestic or intimate space, and there's often a semi-public space that people drop into, like a bar or a coffee shop or whatever, and then there's the workplace. And it's interesting how the bunker sort of fulfills all of those, because it's a space that quite a few people now have come into.
Yeah, well, yeah. But
it's also a very
secret lair.
Yeah, stop taking people there. But it's also a domestic and an intimate space, and it's also a workplace. Shout out to the giant telescope. I so hope that one day, if you look at the back of the war room, that there's a giant telescope. And
can we see them using it?
We want to see them using it. Maybe it's when they're watching for the aliens landing.
Oh, no. Not aliens. You know how they feel about aliens.
But then onto the next family that we had involved in the episode, which, of course, was Castiel and Claire. And I think there's a parallel there with Sam and Dean in a way, because Cass is having to deal with the dark elements of himself and what he's done, and see that reflected in Claire, because he can't escape from the fact that he's responsible for her father's death.
Yeah.
And you can wrap that up any way you like.
And he tries.
And the fact that Jimmy consented and that it was his choice as well and all those things, but he can't escape from the fact that Claire, you know, this man's daughter, you're saying you took my father away, and you're standing there looking like him now, and this
I is can't think of anything more horrible, quite frankly.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, is so well done, because it really, again, without, if you like, without, you know, saying that, it's just presenting Cass with the facts, if you like. Even if you rationalise it and do all those things and minimise it, you can't get away from the fact that at the end of the day, Jimmy Novak's dead and she doesn't have a father and Cass wears his body.
Yeah,
and I think the difficult, you know, again, that's another aspect of what these guys do, and how do you deal with those consequences?
And we don't often actually see a representation of those consequences, and that's what Claire is. She's just standing in the middle of the room as an outright representation of the of consequences of, you know, the supernatural that have played into her life. And it's not something we see very often. It's not something that the boys or Cass, they do their thing for the greater good and then they blow out of town again and they don't actually see the aftermath. But there's Claire, the aftermath. And, you know, I think it's actually really fascinating to have her come into the story to sort of be that aftermath of what has happened, and makes you kind of look at the greater good and the choices that you make, and are they the right ones if this is the outcome?
Yeah, and I think it's that taking the big picture stuff, you know, fighting to save the world from evil, down to the personal. I don't really, you know, Cass could stand there and talk about, you know, heaven's plans to do this, that, and the other, and the apocalypse and all that. Doesn't mean a hill of beans to, you know, when you've lost your father.
No.
And I think it's that flip side of the, you know, we often hear the whole, you know, the good of the many over the good of the few. And of course, it usually ends up, the person saying that ends up acting for the good of the few anyway. But it's that impact on the individual that we so rarely see, you know, the person who got killed by the building that was falling when the Avengers were saving New York.
Oh my God, how many people got killed when the Avengers, I thought of that, I watched Man of Steel the other day and I was like, how many people died when they were going through that city like them?
Was a, you know, quite a controversy over that movie at the time, of all the deaths, and
there was so many deaths.
Superman wasn't like, hey, let's go over the desert and fight.
Yeah, no,
but
what
it is, we don't often see those consequences, and we see the, and I think, and you know, shout out to Catherine Newton who played Claire, because I think she really captured that brokenness and that grief, and played, you know, this teenager who's had such a fucking hard life.
I really like her, and I think she's doing a great job. And
yeah,
I've actually really enjoyed that character.
You feel her pain, and you know that she's got nowhere to go. She's got no one. She's got to do her best on her own. And then, you know, you can feel that Cass wants to help fix it, but he's just not the right person to do that.
Not at all.
And, you know, there's a lovely arc, though, where, you know, by the end she's seen that, you know, that he does care, and that even though if that's sort of an impossible thing for her to accept at the moment, there is a connection made. And I think that sort of – I like the fact that things aren't – nothing's fixed.
But I also like the fact that Cass let her go and didn't sort of go, no, you know, I've got to look after you. There was a learning on Cass's side as well that – you know, maybe this isn't the right, maybe I'm not the right person to be helping this girl in this moment. And I thought that was, I thought both of them, there was a nice, as you say, it wasn't fixed. They didn't kind of make it, it didn't all feel sunshine and when they left each other, but you felt like both of them sort of learnt a little bit of tolerance isn't the right word, but they learnt something in the process. You know, Claire can kind of understand where Cass is coming from, but she doesn't want it. Cass kind of can understand that he has to back off because she doesn't want to. There seemed to be that little bit of learning going on both sides, I thought.
Although I did find it very hard seeing her go off into the world on her own.
You know what? She's safer out there on the road than she is with the Cass and the Winchesters. Well, come on, man. Everybody dies around them.
No, but even she could just stay in the bunker for a while.
Look, that didn't help Kevin.
No, I know, but I felt for her, and I mean,
no, I know, but I also thought
tried to find her mum, even if her mum's going to be hopeless.
There was that. I thought that could happen, but
wouldn't he have given her a whole lot of money?
He could have done that. We had this conversation, didn't we? Got him into college or something.
No, I don't think she's at a going to college point.
He could have just manifested a whole lot of money for her.
Yeah, a couple of hundred grand and set her up somewhere.
But she might know, you know, like I thought there was something in recognizing what she wanted to do. And as much as she was out there on her own, she'd been doing that for quite some time.
Of course. And it is about, and I think with Sam and Dean, and we're seeing that reflected here, it's about respecting the other person's agency, that they've got a right to make a choice, even if it's not a good even if you don't agree with what they choose, the point is letting them have a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
That was Sam and Dean's big lesson last season, and I think...
And I think that's what was going on here. I think that's what Castiel was recognising, and I thought that was good learning on his behalf.
Yes. And that's hard because, you know, a whole lot of our journey with Cass has been about his desire to want to fix stuff, you know, to fix heaven and what that led to Godstiel and the Leviathans. You know, that's not turned out well, and it led to, you know, eventually Metatron getting control of heaven and the angels falling. And that was all about Castiel wanting to step in and go, you know, I was involved with breaking this, I will fix it. So I think it was, you know, these episodes with Claire were very significant for Casca, as you say, learning that or accepting that sometimes, you know, I can't fix it, you know, and that it's also about other people's ability, you know, me recognizing that other people or beings have agency and I have to respect that. So I think that's, you know, very parallel to what Sam and Dean are going through is a really important point that he's got to.
And I'm not so sure that he's not checking in on her anyway, because let's face it, he can pop in and out, make himself invisible.
No, remember, he can't do that. So it's even more
forgot. Yeah, he can't do that.
Even more weighty that he can't he can't just angel himself in and out. So
I forget that they can't fly anymore.
Yes, so he really does have to let go.
Drive the pimp mobile. I love his car so much. I love that he's stuck with that car.
Seriously. It suits him in a very bizarre sort of way.
I feel like he must have bought it, otherwise the cops would have been on him by now. I reckon he went and bought that car. To match his trench coat. Do you think he's going to put on a tie next time we see him?
Oh, that'll be interesting, seeing she said she liked the tie. And I thought that was a lovely line, because it really was about it was encapsulating her acceptance of him. you know, put the tie back on, and that's, you know, that's how her dad dressed, and, you know, it was, yeah, there was something in that about that. So I thought that was just a lovely little beat there. And then we have our third family, Rowena and Crowley.
We make the Winchesters look positively functional.
Oh, dear. Rowena, you're deliciously evil.
But please, please, why isn't Crowley seeing through it? Like, I'm just
I don't know that he's not.
I think he's getting. I honestly don't think he's 100% on board with her, but he's way more high percentage on board with her than he should be, quite frankly. And I'm just like going, Crowley, you're really smart. That's why you're still alive. You're going to be dead really soon unless you wise up.
Got to remember, he is on the rebound.
I know. See, that's why I absolutely say that too. He apart from the fact that he wants to be loved, he's lost, and, you know, like, he's lost his bestie, and I think a lot of what has happened to Crowley in the last couple of seasons has deeply changed him. And I don't think it's just the fact that he's still got human blood inside him or any of that stuff. I think he's just been changed by experience, including hanging out with Dean. That would change anybody, let's face it. and I just don't think it doesn't look like anything satisfying to him anymore. You know, he's kind of just
looks
bored.
I mean, similar to the way Sam and Dean went through their own wrangling with what hunting meant to them, that happened after they really, particularly after they didn't have sort of a big bad to fight. And I think, you know, Crowley's always obviously been scrambling to get up the chain and do stuff. Now he's got hell.
What the hell now?
He's got Abaddon's not there to fight against. Yeah, now he's got hell.
It's all paperwork.
It's all paperwork. I love that. It's
scrolls.
Yeah, and I think that is part of it. It's like, what does being the king of hell mean? And, you know, he seems, you know, not motivated to go on some sort of chaotic spree of, you know, evil or anything. It's like, what does it mean? And I think there's that, also that, not just the hole left by Dean, but also I think Rowena represents an energy and an ambition that he's lacking. And it's like, well, I think even though subconsciously he knows that that it's, you know, she's probably not entirely on his side, I think just having that energy there is good.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's all stupid mother stuff all wrapped up in that, I'm sure, because, you know, like, he's, you know, talks about being left in the workhouse and all that kind of stuff, and now his mam's arrived on the scene, just, you know, and there has to be a whole lot of weird stuff going on for him like that as well. But please, Crowley, don't fall for it, because I'm just, you're so smart, and like, and she's so obvious. Just like, I know that we're looking at it from a different perspective, but I'm like, oh, please, my gosh. But yeah, she's certainly a lot of fun to watch, and I actually have absolutely zero idea what she's doing. I assume she's sitting in his throne. I'm assuming she's trying to, you know, weasel her way into taking over hell or something, but I don't really know.
Well,
what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't. I mean, there's a lot we don't know about Rowena.
It's really
either,
mysterious.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think we know she's got ambition.
Yes.
But where Crowley,
she won't apologise for being a career woman.
Oh, look, and seriously, I don't really care, because I can just watch Ruth Cannell and Mark Shepherd chew the scenery together.
Oh, my
gosh. All day long. Seriously, I would watch their web series, like a cooking show.
Cooking with Crowley,
honestly,
and
together they are just delicious, and you know, I'm sure there'll be more chaos caused by either or both of them down the track.
I'm sure, and maybe together.
Yes. Well, I think that'll be the interesting thing, and I mean, obviously, you know, they can either team up or they could go against each other. Or something in between, obviously.
Well, I reckon they'll probably end up going against each other, but maybe not from the beginning. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, it's pretty interesting that we have. I don't know if that's going to be the end up being the thing that everybody ends up fighting is her. You know, is that how everybody's all going to come together? Because all the stories all invariably interlock. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see if everybody ends up fighting Rowena, including Crowley. Because, you know, when Not Moose rang him, he's like, the little bit of spark that lit up his little face.
It's like, his face.
It's my like, boy, you know. And I was just like, oh, my God. And I was like, he's going off to meet the only people he really cares about. And I'm like, how screwed up is this? Their relationship is all levels of wrong. It's just so weird. He's going off to meet his family, essentially.
Well, and the other side of it is, even the fact that, you know, the Winchesters have Crowley on speed dial and can call him up and 666. Like, hey, dude, we need that first blade.
Yeah, no worries, dudes. I'll come and meet you in the rain. How was that scene? I can't remember seeing a scene where they were so completely drenched. They were all so drenched in that scene.
And it was wonderful.
I know, it was very pretty. And Sam particularly was very, very, very pretty when he was wet. Dean's got so much product in his hair that it just sort of sat on top. But he's nothing if not stylish.
Yeah.
He gets up every morning and does his hair. God bless him. Doesn't matter that he's got the mark of Cain. He's got to have his hair gel just right.
Well, let's face it, you know, Sam's in there with the hair straightener for at least an hour. I have to say, in that episode, I had this almost uncontainable urge to want to run up and just ruffle my hands through Sam's hair because it was just looking so perfect. And I was like, I was very pleased he got drenched. And I imagined
it looked really good.
I just need to go and get a blowout immediately.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine if it just dried? It's going to dry all curly.
No, I want him popping in. They need to pop into the salon. Dean can get his fluffy bits of the back shaved, and Sam gets a blowout while Cass has a manicure. There you go.
Yes, I like that. Someone write that, please. Somebody write that. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, it is pretty funny that they just ring up Crowley and that Crowley's like, you know what, boys, I'll come meet you. I love it. And he went and did it. I mean, he was incredulous, like I think all of us were, that, oh, my God, they're going to get the first blade and put it anywhere near Dean. No. But he went off and got her. And, of course, we also had the fabulous scene where Rowena built a skeleton bird or something, and then
her little hex spell thing.
That was beautiful, little hex spell thing, and the eyes roll back and the
out. Oh, I
mean, that was so great.
Oh, kudos to the VFX crew, because that was brilliantly done.
It looked amazing. Oh,
that was one of those, I rewatched that just for that moment a number of times. It was just wonderful.
It looked great. And then, of course, she hears everything. But I'm like, shut up, Crowley. Why are you talking about where your bones are? What, have you lost your mind? You just told the Winchesters where your bones are. They get the first blade. They can go and foof you. I mean, the guy's lost his mind, clearly.
But, again, it shows that what
level of trust he has.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he even thinks of as trust, but just that they are his intimates now, and that he doesn't even, and that will maybe his downfall, is that he doesn't ever think that they will
turn
on him.
And he's the one who said the people who die are the people who underestimate the Winchesters. And I remember him saying that.
Yes, ditch those denim-clad nightmares.
And those denim-clad nightmares. I call them denim-clad, some other kind of dream, but never mind.
I know a lot of people have got comfortable with Crowley, but I wouldn't be at all surprised that, you know, Crowley can bite the dust at any time.
Yep, I agree.
And I think that's going to be one of those things that, you know, sneaks up in an episode, we don't expect it, and suddenly, that first blade will be buried deep inside Crowley's gut, and that he will be no more. And every episode I have a little moment of that. I mean, not so much because Rowena's around at the moment, but I just think, yeah, at some point, and particularly with, Dean going darker.
Yeah, look, I'm with you. I'm like... And I think this kind of almost for me, I was like, oh, God, Crowley, what are you doing? Because I've always thought that. I've always thought, I know we're all very comfortable and we all love Mark Shepard and we all think he's going to be around forever. But somewhere inside me, I'm like, dude's still the king of hell and a demon. And at some point, I feel like he's going to put a foot wrong again and be taken out. And just watching how he has become so lackadaisical around the boys and the information he's sharing. And, I was like, Oh, he's really let his guard down around the Winchester and at Winchesters, and even though they're, you know, like going to him for help and stuff, I honestly don't think their opinion of him has greatly changed.
No. They're more pragmatic now than they would
Yes.
have been, in that
They
he
can
has a
use him, yeah.
purpose. And they also, I think, although this hasn't been articulated, so it's sort of my headcanon, I think, as with what happened with Abaddon, realise that there's a role to having Crowley there. It is
Yes.
literally the devil you know. Killing Crowley creates a vacuum that could be filled by
Something
someone
worse.
worse, or nothing, and that would be chaos. And so I do think there's a and I, you know, I don't think they've necessarily sat down and thought it through, but I think that's
yeah,
underlies
definitely.
their motivation in not killing him every time they see him. For example, he is useful to go and get the first blade.
Exactly,
for them.
Exactly.
And strangely, that they can sort of trust him.
Sort of, yeah, that he's going to do it.
Which is really, really bizarre.
Yeah, and that he rings them to tell them he's got it. I've got the first blade. Woohoo! I'm just going to hang on to it for you. You know, I'm just like, oh my God. Don't even leave them waiting or anything. I've got it. But yeah, I think his relaxed attitude around the Winchesters may one day become his comeuppance. And that'll be a sad day, but like you, I won't be surprised. Well, I'll probably be shocked as hell, but...
Oh, and look, you know, this may not happen until
and it may
you know,
not.
Season 13.
Season 37.
Oh, can we stop for a moment and pause the magnificence of having, for those of you who didn't hear or watch the con footage at the convention in Houston, Jared and Jensen's dads came on stage, introduced by Richard
dads.
Spade as being dads, hashtag dads,
as finally
being, Sam and Dean in Supernatural season 37, and it was just a gorgeous, gorgeous moment. And I mean, how much do we love them having their dads on
I
stage?
No, bless. We love them a lot.
We love them hugely. That
yes,
was just
we
such
do.
A wonderful moment. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe we could have them play older Sam and Dean in an episode. I don't know if Mr. Padalecki senior has done any acting
no.
like Alan Ackles has, but you
I
know,
I don't think so.
Maybe.
But maybe, who knows? Might have been in a school play. that would be so fun, though.
Anyway, it was a gorgeous moment.
It was.
Anyway, we're not on season 30s, and maybe that's when Crowley will die. Anyway, on to There's No Place Like Home.
Oh, I love this episode so much. I was
How emotional was this? I really wasn't expecting...
Oh, can I just stop you and tell you I sobbed at the end of this episode? I can't... When was the last time I sobbed like this? Oh, probably like two episodes ago. You know?
Yeah, not that long ago, but anyway.
Anyway, it sounded good when I thought of it for a second.
Really the
I don't think so. But I did. I absolutely sobbed. And it was like this stupid, weird sob of sadness and happy feels because I was like so devastated. Like, just Dean just, you know, like, you know. And he just killed me. And I was just like, oh, God, I'm just, I just died for him at the end of that episode and how just broken he was. But on the flip side, those boys and you know, like, Sam's like, we can do it, you know, you can do it, we can do it, and you know, well, let's get to work. I was just like, yes! So I did sub. It was, all that was highly emotional, and then everything else in the middle was highly emotional, but I literally, by the time I got to the end, I was such a wreck that I sat on my couch for about 10 minutes and sobbed.
Well, I don't cry because I have no heart, but
I know.
Actually, you know, in the space where my heart was, there was pain. I know I'd found it a lot more emotional, and I think, and also, look, you know, I adore Charlie, and
so
I think this was an episode that was both amazing about Charlie, but she was also there to provide us with so much about the brothers, and again, picking up that theme that we talked about from Hunter Games of, you know, the darkness inside you and the fact of how much is that you. And I mean, it was no coincidence that we had dark Charlie and Dean hanging out and we had good Charlie and Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it was also, and, you know, I know I say this all the time with the great supporting characters that have been made, and how it often feels that, like with Jodie Mills, that it's not that they've come in to guest star in Supernatural, it's almost like a crossover episode with the Jodie Mills series, like, because their lives have gone on and stuff's happened to them, and they're not just, they don't just feel like they've been pasted into a Supernatural episode. And, you know, we certainly got that with Charlie, knowing that all this stuff had gone on in Oz. And I really felt like, oh, this is a crossover episode with the, you know, Charlie Adventures in Oz steampunk series that Robbie Thompson's going to write one day.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds awesome. I hope he does. He should. I think Charlie is such a solid character as well that, you know, it's always great to revisit her. Every time I meet her, I like her more. But she's also a character that I can see very clearly living in our real world. You know, like, she's not sort of something that, she's not a creation that doesn't feel real. She feels very real. And, like, I could imagine her living next door to me. You know what I mean? So that would be awesome if she did, because she's really cool and much better than the person.
Well, and she's, you know, I love how we've got each episode we've had a bit more about her story. Her story, her backstory, her current story, and, you know, and what's really clear by now is she is basically a Winchester in that terms of her own story having a parallel to theirs in terms of having lost her family, having to go out on her own. I mean, Dean...
hunting the thing that killed her family.
Yeah, and then Dean and Sam reading her file, you know, and Sam's, you know, she was obviously as a teenager really troubled, and Dean going, well, you know, imagine what our files would have looked like.
I loved how Dean kept doing that. Like, he did that, and also when they were watching the video of her, and he's like, well, imagine if they watched a video of us, you know, we'd look like that too if we were beating up a demon. Yeah. And you know, he was so protective of her. You know, he was so upset she hadn't called. Charlie's back, she didn't call us, you know, and it was just lovely to see him, you know, and how much he wanted to believe in her as well, and almost,
well,
you know,
and
also
he recognizes the minute he's faced with Dark Charlie, and then he just puts his knife down and it's like, I know this isn't you.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt in his
mind.
No,
exactly.
That's not, air quotes, the real Charlie.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that whole letting Dark Charlie in to kill the guy from Tall Tales, actor from Tall Tales. I was like, oh my god. I think a lot of that I think was his desire to believe in Charlie.
Yeah.
But I also think it was his desire to believe that Dark Charlie would be able to control herself.
Yeah.
And not kill, because then that means Dark Dean.
Yeah. He was seeing himself
in
her. Let's
he wasn't being gullible, he was being hopeful, I think.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's a really good way of putting it, Amy. Yeah, definitely not gullible there. I think that was his definite, you know, at least subconscious hope is that she can be on top of this.
And if she can, I can.
Yeah, and that conversation they have first when they're in the bar about, you know, as we touched on before, and her saying, you know, this is part of me though. And they have that discussion though, which Sam's part of, about, you know, you can't just lock that dark part away. You can't ignore it. You can't just, lock it away and think that you can go on. You have to integrate, you know, and this is like, you know, therapy 101. You know, you have to integrate that shadow self with yourself to be whole. You can't, and you know, I like the fact that Charlie made the point that good Charlie was boring and she didn't like, you know, you need both parts together. And the,
exactly. You
know, normally I'd be hitting Harvey wall bangers and
checking
on the
checking out the ass.
Bartender's ass. Now I'm just having club soda and I want to send her to college.
I love how both the boys looked at the bartender as well. They're like, whoop.
Hey, that was one hot bartender.
She was very hot.
And, you know, so I like the fact that they really made that point that you need to integrate those two parts to be a whole person. It's not about being all good or all bad.
No,
and, you know,
exactly.
Again, that's Supernatural's been going on about for 10 seasons
exactly.
Now. But I think it's important, and I think we saw that too with at the end when good Charlie has to kill the man of letters, Clive?
Possibly.
Clive, I've forgotten his name for a moment. Clive, it is Clive. Has to kill Clive is that sometimes, you know, doing the good thing mightn't be what you expect. So she had to kill someone to do the good thing. And, you know, she really reiterates the line that, you know, Sam had said to Dean at the end of the previous episode when he said, you know, you've got maybe the powers within you. And she uses the line from The Wizard of Oz, the magic was in you all the time.
I know. I said, you and The Wizard of Oz. I was like, oh, my God, Jules Mess.
But, you know, that her saying that. It's
a reflection of what Sam said to Dean in the earlier episode. Maybe the magic's in you anyway, you know, that you can control this thing.
Yes.
Which was
But it was, yeah, it was, I mean, I always loved the evil twin trope. I thought Felicia did an amazing job of being evil Charlie and good Charlie.
I thought she was amazing too. I loved both Evil Charlie and Good Charlie. I thought they were both fantastic. And then when we got Whole Charlie at the end, I was like, oh, there she's back. She's fantastic as well.
And really like, dirty, you know, bitches. How awesome is she? It's just like, you know, she survived, you know, she saved Oz. She survived. She manages to, you know, survive reintegrating with her dark self and broken arm and all. She's off
again.
World on her own, totally on her own to help the Winchesters.
But she's going on a quest, which is what she wanted.
Yes,
see, what she didn't actually get a quest when she went to Oz. She had an adventure, and like she said, there's plenty of adventure back here in Winchesterland. But before then, before she went off to Oz, she's like, what's my quest? Well, now she's got a quest. She's got a great quest, and she's got to help one of her family now and try and figure out how to save him. And, you know, I saw her going off and thought, this is exactly what she wanted, you know, when she came to see the, in the last time, whatever episode, the last Oz episode, when she came and she said, you know, that, but what is my quest? And now she's on it. I thought that was fantastic. I thought, yay, she's got a quest. A really good one. I loved it. And she said some great stuff, you know, like to Dean, you know, about him never forgiving himself, you know, and I know that's
I loved how she called him out on that.
How's I loved that it. How's that Dean? Working out for you? And he's just like, shut up, you know, and gets up and hugs her. You can just see his face like, stop now. But I loved that she called him out on that because that, you know, that is how he rolls and he doesn't forgive himself for anything and he carries it around and look where he ends up.
Exactly.
And, part of the reason,
you know,
he's
the
got
fact
the
that she, you know, unequivocally, you know, forgives him. That's, you know, there's no conditions on it, and that she knows he won't hear that. So
yeah, exactly. But it was, I loved too when she said to them, you know, you've got something Kane hasn't got, and his eyes flicked to Sam. Did you notice that? I was just oh my God. And then she goes, "You're a Winchester," which, you know, is something also she's talked about how when she read the books. Awkward. how you know the fact that the Winchesters, when they're together, can do anything, you know, and so she's saying to him, you know, you've got something that Cain didn't have. Cain was alone when he had to tackle the mark of Cain, you know, but you've got your brother and you're a Winchester. And I just thought the whole last scene was so awesome and the hugging and, you know, she fits just under both their chins.
Oh,
and
I know.
Just was so beautiful.
And it's just, you know, it's a role that she and also, you know, Cass and Jodie Mills is, you know, gives us a chance, as you and I have often talked about, for the boys to get this outside feedback as well. And there was a big theme running through here of this episode of mirrors. You know, Dean keeps looking, seeing in this episode, in the last episode, you know, he's looking at himself. What does he see when he looks in the mirror? And that idea of, you know, the dark self being reflected and, you know, really Charlie's story here is a reflection of what they're going through. And I think one thing that really struck me too is, you know, as I said, we had dark Dean with Dean with dark Charlie and we had Sam with good Charlie. And what, for me, what that was saying is in the Sam Dean dyad at the moment, Sam is the good part, and Sam and it was noticeable when Dark Charlie said to when she first met Sam and Dean, and she says to Sam that you're awful of intentions, and he's an albatross around your neck.
And Dean touches his arm like it's okay. Yeah. I was like,
And the flip side of that is, I mean, she was saying that because she's
being mean. She's being mean.
But the thing is, he is the albatross around Demon Dean's neck. He's the thing stopping Demon Dean.
Yeah, he is.
From going. Yeah. So it's a good thing. He's good Dean's anchor. It might be an albatross to Demon, you know, Dark Dean. And I think that was emphasized throughout the episode, is that Sam...
And is that, that's exactly what Sam has become. That's the word I've been using. He's become Dean's anchor in now. And it's just, you know, like, and like you're saying, he is like the reflection of the good. And he's totally become Dean's anchor in this world.
And he's reflecting, you know, he's also literally reflecting that back to Dean. You know, you've got the power. You can do this. We can do this. And so he's, you know, he's acting as that mirror, you know, so Dean looks at himself, he sees the darkness, but he looks at Sam and he can see the good. And I think that was really, really emphasised in this episode of Sam being that good part.
And I think also in the way Dean tried to change his eating plans, he started to eat like Sam. But I think that was a real reflection of exactly what you're saying. As comedic as it was to see Dean tossing, you know, trying to eat an egg white omelette and kale, you know, nice shout out to the Collins guy, and you know, eating almonds while Bob Singer is telling him how to stay quiet, you know, mind you quiet, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Does Misha get a commission every time anyone mentions kale?
I don't know. But the fact that he was choosing to not drink and have green, weird-looking shakes and...
He's trying to be Sam.
He was trying to be Sam. You know, like, he was emulating his brother because his... I think two things. I think, one, what you said about the fact that at the moment Sam is reflecting back to Dean the good and so, you know, he wants to be like that. But I also think he's seen... Sam has been down this road. Sam has had the dark thing inside of him and has come out the other side good and human.
Let's be like Sam.
So, let's be more like Sam. Maybe that's how I get through this, to be more like my brother. I think that was like really gorgeous. Yeah. Am I overthinking it?
No. I'm sure I tweeted out during the week, Sam is Dean's egg white omelet.
Yeah. Sam's Dean's spirit animal right now.
He is. I think that's true. But I also love the, you know, and then another layer of that was Sam was eating and drinking, like, so all the things that Dean was. I love that sort of the positive, like, the supportive enabler.
Yeah,
good,
I know.
The good enabler. So
he's like this egg white omelet's awesome. And Dean's like, it's rubbish.
But even when they're at the bar, they all had soda water.
Yeah, I know.
I just thought, you know, those subtle signs of support and that, you know, because, you know, Sam might eat salad, but he does like a drink.
He does.
So those little things, I think, were just, just incredible and add to that idea of that it's going to take the two of them, you know, to get through this.
Exactly.
And, you know,
we've always said that the boys are two halves of one whole.
Yeah, and as I said, I think that splitting of Charlie and paralleling that with Sam and Dean as being two halves of, you know, as Sarah Gamble used to say, the relationship was the third character on the show. So, and I think that, you know, it was strongly the sense we were getting there. And I thought that, you know, the episode played so well for that. And I think that's why I found it so emotional as well, because not only was it an emotional journey for Charlie, but we were at every scene, we were getting this resonance with, you know, sometimes subtly and sometimes more explicitly with the boys and their journey and their relationship at the moment.
I know, it was really beautiful. By the end of it, them and just even the closing shot as Charlie left and the boys are like literally standing shoulder to shoulder, you know, in the hallway before they, you know, have a conversation. Sam pats Dean on the shoulder and Dean's hands calmed. And, you know, your first thought is Dean's hand is calmed now because the mark of Cain has been sated. But, you know, it's also because of Sam. You know, Sam has told him that they can do it together.
That
and, you know,
nice,
Sam
nice
is Sam calms him.
Going through the through the show of Dean looking and you know, you feeling the power of the mark inside him. But I think even Robbie Thompson mentioned on Twitter that, you know, that was a point at the end where, like, you could almost feel the will of fandom going, they're going to hug, they're going to hug. oh, God, they're not going to hug. But it was I think so brilliantly done was that we got, like, it didn't matter to me that they, you know, that they didn't hug, because all
I think it would have felt weird if they hugged right then, quite
well,
frankly.
Yeah, they're not walking around the bunker hugging every minutes, are they? Not with their clothes on.
Well, I was going to say, it depends what kind of fan fiction you read, Jules.
Well, I don't know, because actually, you know, I'm all about the sassy, because I adored them topping and tailing with the phone calls.
Oh, I know. Me too. Cats. I love that they're just touching base all the time.
You know, and it's a good explanation of where Cass is, you know, he's out there looking for things to help Dean. But that, you know, then you get this continual concern from the two people closest to Dean is that, you know, they're checking up with each other about what's going on. And they were actually, now I know you have a little beef about how Americans talk on the phone in TV shows, don't you?
I do. They never actually say goodbye, and it really bothers me. They just keep talking and then they go, yep, that'll be fine. And then they hang up. They never go, okay, see ya. Thanks for calling. You know, talk to you later.
I don't think Sam said bye, but they actually felt like telephone calls. Like they weren't,
yeah, they did.
They weren't for the purpose of exchanging information. So they had that sort of broke it, like, are you there? Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, you know, see, you know, they just had that feel of a checking in telephone call. I mean, I know it's a little thing, but it really, again, gave that.
I love that they were checking in, and I love that Sam and Cass are chatting on the phone. You know, I just love that. But I felt, because, I mean, in the past, sometimes Cass has kind of disappeared for ages. I'm like, well, where the hell's Cass and why isn't he checking in with them? But this made it feel, you know, made him feel included in the story as well, because he was in a sense sort of, you know, he's privy to everything that's going on because Sam is keeping him up to date.
Yes, and that he's out there, you know, searching,
doing his thing, yeah.
Doing his thing as well. And, yeah, no, I just I adored those little things. So, yeah, totally shipping Sam and Cass at the moment. Sam Steele.
Yeah, no.
Oh, they're all having nude slumber parties in the bunker. And Charlie's off with the waitress.
All I want to see is actual fan art of Dean's demonic tramp stamp. I actually want to see that as fan art. Can someone please do that for me? Thank you very much.
And what did he get on that tramp stamp?
I don't know. I was just like, that's awesome.
Oh, maybe he got really, really drunk and Crowley was there and he's got, like, Crowley. Crowley forever around a pentagram.
Oh, God, I laughed so loud. Yeah, anyway, that was pretty awesome.
So that's the last two episodes. They have been incredibly amazing.
They have been.
Yeah, I think you've got the idea what we felt about them. Lovely to have Charlie back.
I really hope we're going to see her again, because hopefully maybe her quest will bring her back to us.
Well,
I certainly think Sam will talk to her on the phone.
And look, you know, the lovely thing is, like, Jodie, she's out there and she can come back at any time. I thought, like, extraordinary performance from Felicia. I'm sure it's really hard doing, you know, the good twin, evil twin thing. And I thought she played both of them incredibly well.
She also had the very, very testing scene of having to wrap her thighs around Jensen Ackles' throat. Which must have been the worst day ever.
She tweeted something along the line of, you know, life's ambition.
Off the bucket list.
And Dean's wonderful strangled crap at that point apparently was ad-libbed by Jensen.
Which was hilarious.
But, yes, I imagine not an easy thing to do 50 times.
Yeah. I just need to feel that was quite right. Can I do that take again?
The other difficult thing Felicia had that I did want to mention was that it was while she was filming this, she'd done a blog post about the – hashtag Gamergate controversy, which if you don't know about, I'm not going to explain now, but you must live under a rock, but go and look it up. And she posted a very very personal response to what had been going on, and then was, of course, abused and attacked and doxxed in response, which actually means people published her address and where she lived, which is, you know, an easy way that people use to further abuse of people on the internet. And she had to film while she was doing that. In fact, filmed the scene where she kills Russell Wellington. That whole scene she had to film, having just found out that, you know, her address and phone number being published on the internet. So
such incredible invasion, isn't it?
Yeah, and incredibly and I think she tweeted that you know, sort of added to, well, didn't add to, but you know, she was certainly feeling intense during that scene. So I thought that was just, I wanted to give her a shout out for, you know, getting through doing that during a time when most of us would be falling apart in many, many ways. So that was wonderful work from her. And look, I just, you know, no secret, I absolutely adore Charlie. And I think it's episodes like this, and we also the episode with Jodie and Donna earlier this season, that, you know, I think we were all scared for a while that just about everyone in the boys' lives had been killed off.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Garth had sort of been moved out of the story because he's a werewolf, and Charlie had gone off to Oz. And it's like, it's sort of nice to know these people are around, both because I want the boys to have friends.
Yes.
But also because, you know, we also find out so much more about them, and we get those moments when we can see the Sam and Dean talking about each other to someone else, and that they can have, you know, moments of reflection because they learn something from the people around them.
It's very important. Otherwise, they live in just this little isolated world, and you don't get to see whole sides of them because you don't get them reflected back through other people. It's very important to have for them to have friends, and I think Charlie's a great one.
And the final episode will be the boys inviting all their friends to the bunker.
They have a party!
Party!
A party in their secret lair.
Everyone will live happily ever after.
Woohoo! Yay! Ghost of Kevin will be there.
Oh no, you made me all sad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh no, I brought you down. I was meant to be happy.
But look, what two wonderful episodes to start back for this second half of the season. I can't believe it's, in some ways, the fact that it's only episode 11, it feels like it's been such a full season already.
I know,
and
does.
That we've been through so much.
I'm glad it's only episode 11.
I know. It's how wonderful it is to have the show back, but it's also that sort of you know, push and pull of, it's back. I don't
want it to finish.
I don't want it to be over.
But at least we know we've got 11.
Oh, 11 seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got another season. At least we're not sort of sitting at this point going wondering, but you know, we're like, woohoo, who cares?
Oh, amazing. I don't know if we wouldn't have talked about that.
No, I don't think we have. I think that might have happened post. Yeah, it did, because it happened during hiatus. So, yeah, we haven't mentioned. Yes, season 11. Yay!
As everyone knows, and earliest renewal any time, and also CW renewed all its prime shows. Yeah, so, but wonderful. I mean, I think we all thought it was on the cards. And it is nice. No, it's nice for the writers who obviously knew probably before us.
I would think they knew before.
But it means that, and I think Jeremy Carver mentioned that they can start sort of planting things now and thinking, well, we don't need to wrap that up this season. That can go, you know, into next season.
Yep.
So, you know, they can make some of those arcs stretch over, and that's great because it means that, you're not trying to bang everything into one season. So yay, more boys!
Yay! More boys! And I think we've got a couple of weeks, and then I think we've got a 2-week hiatus. Is that right? 2 or 3 weeks? We've got a 2-week hiatus coming up in March.
Yes, and then we come back. We're on a Wednesday night.
That's correct.
So that's where we move to Wednesday on. I think it's the 18th of March.
That is
so
right.
So we'll be back after Ollie and Arrow.
We will be. We'll be back. We will.
We
be
won't
back.
Be failing this night.
No,
sorry.
It'll be. It's a good place to be back behind Arrow. I think that'll be great.
They're behind us.
They're behind us.
Well, they're first.
Off the back of Arrow. Yes, off the
off
back
the
of Arrow.
Back. It all sounds very rude. Ooh. Sorry, and we're excited because Stephen and Jensen were tweeting each other this morning, even if it was about golf.
I know, there's too much adorable for tweets. And then Stephen tweeted a picture of Jared.
Said that they were the same person. I do like that he had a picture of Jared handy.
I do too. He had a picture of Jared.
Well, then I like to think that this is probably the public playing out of a private text war that's been going on for a long time.
Maybe,
so
yeah.
Sure, he's had lots of time to make photos of himself with Jared.
I'll be looking forward to hearing how that golf game goes when they finally get to play
yes,
it.
I didn't know Stephen was a golfer.
No, I didn't either. I love that Jensen's cocky enough to give him five. I guess that means he's giving him points.
Yes.
Yes. Smarty pants.
We'll see. Oh, I must say, though, at least Stephen's wine company has been up and running for a while now. Still waiting, Jared Jensen.
Yes, a bit thirsty over here.
Yes, please, get that wine happening. We want to give you all our monies.
Yes, all the money in the world.
All the ones we've got left,
yes.
Which aren't many.
So how many – so have we got three apps before the hiatus? Have we? Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah, three apps before the hiatus. Yeah, no, so that's okay because while the hiatus is on, I'm in Vegas. So they've very politely not had two episodes while I'm away. So just kind of nice of them. Okay, I'm be away.
But it is also fun watching it on the real TV
that's
with
actually,
the ads and
Hazel
everything.
And I were like, oh, shite, it's the only time we actually get to watch the show together. That's when we go to conventions. But anyway.
That is always fun, but yeah. With American ads in it, is always amusing. Telling you about all the medications that you should take, which will probably
but
kill
they'll
you.
Have reruns, oh. So maybe we'll watch the reruns.
Oh, that's true. Oh, you might even have a TNT marathon.
Stop! That would be awesome.
I always get jealous of those.
Yeah, me too.
Like, not that we can't watch it on Netflix or DVD.
I know,
or
really, I can have my own marathon anytime I want, but it's different. Jeez.
It is. Look, that's enough from us. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
We could talk and talk and talk about it. Obviously, I hope you're enjoying the return of Supernatural this season. We'll be back probably after next week's episode because I think that's going to be an awesome one. And to talk more about it, please drop us a line at – what's our email address?
It's wolspn@gmail.com.
Or hit us up on Twitter.
You know where we are.
You know where we are. We never shut up. Thank you very much. Squee.
Squee.
And hashtag dads.
Stop. Bye.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.